I'd like to take a moment to introduce two Dharma companions very near and dear to me, Tony Patchell and John King. We've practiced together for a long time, but for the last 18 months we've spent a particularly intimate time practicing together, preparing for and completing what's known as Dharma transmission. So I invited Tony, the elder brother, to speak tonight, and John, I think, is next week. So I'd like to call you. Many of you know about Tony and John, but some of you may not. So this is Tony Patchell, who's married to Garmin Kong, who some of you know, and they're building a zendo. As we speak, they're building a zendo in Burndo under their house.
Thank you, Blanche. Thank you very much. Good evening. So I hear you've been studying and practicing Sinsin Ming. The great way is not difficult, just have no preferences. Usually it's the first two lines that are given, but I like just to say the great way is not difficult. So I'd like to talk about three things tonight, if I can, and I will try to keep it short. I realize, having spent many a Wednesday night in here, that when people go past 30 minutes and 1 second, everyone starts to leave. So I'll try to keep it short for you. So what I want to talk about is about preferences and about what's in front of you. And I want to talk about Joshu Jushin, mostly because I really like him, and I've been thinking about him a lot. And if I'm fortunate, if you're fortunate, maybe I can tie them all together so that it makes some sort of sense. So, what's in front of you? Preferences. Some years ago, I tutored a young woman who was a psych grad student. Her name was Saliha, and she was from Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, and she was an eager student, and in her country she was a published and well-known poet. She came to our house on Laguna Street. We lived right around the corner. One morning a week, and it was my job to teach her how to beat the life out of the English language so it would be presentable in the world of academia. So Saliha once told me that she was a liberated woman in her country. So one day, after we'd been working together for some months, I asked her what a liberated woman aspired to in her culture. And she said, with great fervor, "I live and breathe in order to bear children who will grow up and kill Jews." And I said, "Saliha, my wife is Jewish. Actually, Darlene is a hillbilly." This is true, but that's another story. I'll let her explain that. Anyway, Saliha was clearly taken aback, and after an embarrassed pause, she says, "Well, I live and breathe in order to bear children who will grow up to kill Israelis." I go, "Oh, you know." But this was, working with her was quite an education, I must say. I always remember that interchange, obviously. But after a year or so, at the end of our studies, she invited me to her apartment, her place, for a formal farewell dinner. And I go, and she's all dressed up, and she sits me down at the table and says, "In my country, the male guest is always offered the choicest, most delectable part of the meal." So much for liberated women, I thought. You know. Anyway, she then brings in and places before me a plate of white rice with canned tomatoes on top. And on top of that was this huge single boiled fish head with both his poached eyes looking right at me. And she stood there beaming with pride and gratitude. And sometimes you don't have the illusion or the luxury of choice. And this was such a moment. There was no way out. I had to do it. So that was a time when I definitely had a preference, but it was just too bad. But tonight I want to talk also about a koan that has to do with just as it is, right in front of you, involving one of our wonderful ancestors, Joshu, who exemplified and lived to the fullest for his long life the mind of absolute trust. So, Zhaozhu, Zhaochu, Joshu, Jushin. He was born in 1778 and he died in 897, thus he lived 120 years. And this is 778 to 897. When he was 18, he met his teacher, Nansen, another great Zen master, and he studied with him for 40 years. So when he was 58 years old when Nansen died. And after 4 years of mourning, he began a 20-year pilgrimage. And he studied with, or knew, or visited most of the great teachers of that great time in Zen. Wang Po, Lin Shi, Pai Cheng, Mun Min, Matsu, all of them he knew. At 80 years of age, he settled in a small monastery, Kuan Yin Monastery, and settled down to teach. His practice is one you might want to consider if you're in a hurry. He had 13 Dharma heirs, but his lineage soon died out. His monastery was small, and it was very poor, and it was far to the north of the more active Zen centers of that time. It was hard to get to. The government at that time was beginning to unravel. There was bandits and anarchy everywhere. So he was fairly isolated. And it may be likely that his heirs followed his example, and without thoughts of fame or ambition or gain, they opted for small groups of students in more or less anonymous settings. But you can also say that his lineage has in fact thrived by way of the countless thousands of Zen students who have practiced with Mu. Does a dog have Buddha nature or not? That is Joshu's koan. And of course he's practicing by way of us here tonight. And Joshu is mentioned 5 times in the Book of Serenity, 7 times in the Gateless Barrier, and 12 times in the Bucliffe Records. And his teaching style came to be called lips and mouth Zen because he didn't use a stick, a fist, or a shout. He spoke very softly, sometimes in a whisper, and his words were simple and direct and had great power. It was said that when he spoke, a sparkling light came from his lips. And Joshu knew that words never touched a fact, let alone grasp it. Thus he kept it simple in concrete. He did not draw attention to his, quotes, accomplishments. And outward manifestations of his practice were subtle and confined to everyday affairs. So this story, which I know you've all heard, this version of the story is case number 7 in the Gateless Barrier. A monk said to Joshu, I have just entered this monastery. What is your practice here? Joshu said, have you had your breakfast? The monk says, yes, I have. Joshu said, wash your bowl. The monk understood. Wu Man's comment, Wu Man who put together that Gateless Barrier, Wu Man's comment is, Joshu opened his mouth and showed his gallbladder, his heart, and his liver. I wonder if the monk really heard the truth. I hope he did not mistake the bell for a jar. And then Wu Man's verse. Because it's so very clear, it takes so long to realize. If you just know that flame is fire, you'll find your rice has long been cooked. So one point of the story is, when a Zen master speaks, pay attention. Every word, every phrase is an opportunity for you. Most religions claim that the holy and the mundane are not commensurate, cannot be measured, so to speak, by the same standard. This is not so in Zen. Bodhidharma says nothing holy, but if you do not bow with devotion, Wang Bo will slap you. Go wash your bowl. It's not just daily conversation. It is very important to keep in mind, I think, that friends and family, co-workers, strangers, as well as Zen teachers, can put forth the right speech that changes your world and sets it upright. Each time we speak, each time we listen, is a new time, and all the pieces are in place. We do live in the material, the mundane world. And Joshu points this out. When I was a hippie, all the talk, or there was a lot of talk, about what eventually came down to transcendence. Who would ever want to live in such a fractured and painful world as it was at that time, or this time? What can we do about it? Why isn't there a heaven on earth? So, one of the people who sit with us up on the Russian River, Katie, told me this story that reminded me of those questions not too long ago. This happened in the late 60s sometimes, and she and a friend, another young woman, were traveling around in Katie's van when they picked up a hitchhiker, a young guy. And he thanked them, and he said, I'm sorry, I don't have any money to give you for gas, but I have something I can tell you that's of value. And they said, sure, what? And he said, a little ways outside the town of Kool, up in the foothills, there's a warp in the astral plane. So they said, of course, Kool, you know, far out. After they dropped off the hitchhiker, they decided to go find the warp. So Katie's friend was kind of reluctant, but they went. She agreed. They drove many hours, and they got to Kool in the late evening, and they followed the guy's directions. You know, go through town, go to Cal Creek, turn left, turn right, etc., park, walk up the creek a ways, sit down, and wait. And then he said, you'll see forest animals, but they aren't really animals. Just sit there. And after a while, a gate will appear. And just walk through it. So they followed his directions as best they could. They walked up the creek, sat down, smoked a joint, of course, and waited. So after what seemed like hours and hours, it started to get dark, and nothing had happened. So finally they decided, you know, the hell with it. Let's go to town and have a beer. So they go back into Kool. They go to the nearest bar, order their beers, and the bartender says, hello ladies, what are you doing up this way? And they said, we were told there's a warp in the astral plane up by Cal Creek, so we came up to take a look. And he goes, oh, no, it's not up by Cal Creek, it's down the other way. But Katie's friend wasn't having it. No way, she said, I'm not going to spend the night in a broken down motel and then tromp all over these hills looking for a warp. So a major question of the time for many of us was not only how to live well and how to fix things, but how do I get out of this? And this question is, as you know, the beginning of practice. How do I get out of this? There's a lot of talk about here and now, but no one really seemed to be paying attention about the here and now that really was here and now. I wasn't. I just was in a haze. But at the same time, I was attracted to Zen because what little I knew of it seemed to focus on the concrete, on the physical world of form and color and sound. And I loved haiku, those succinct phrases, the sparse descriptions that somehow connected in my mind to that wonderful pragmatism that once characterized our American way of doing things, and that it manifested itself so beautifully in our art and our literature. Mark Twain, Walt Whitman, Emily Dickinson, Thomas Eakins, Winslow Homer, in his 20th century heir, Edward Hopper. But in this case, with koan, Choshu goes straight to the heart of the matter. There's nothing to get out of here. There's nothing to get. There's no magic. But old Buddha does meet young Buddha. Count on it. It seems as if this monk, this particular monk in this story, had been practicing for a while, because I don't think he was exactly a newcomer, because otherwise, why ask Joshua, the abbot, a simple question that could just as well been asked of the guy standing next to him in the chow line? You know, what's your practice here? So, in the context of this story, it's a loaded question, and it's not so mundane at all. Many, many of these Zen stories, as you know, are everyday conversation, but they're not everyday conversation. Or they're more than everyday conversation. The young monk is polite, but is he challenging Joshu? What can you show me? What have you got? Am I wasting my time here? Not exactly rude, but not exactly totally polite either. Joshu meets the monk and responds politely and matter-of-factly, "Wash your bowl." He challenges the challenge, but without put down and without aggression, without a sense of superiority. And in the midst of his teaching, he kept his personal practice personal, no showing off, nothing extra. Wash your bowl. All of Zen in 3 one-syllable words. No astral claim, no starting, no stopping. There's nothing else, and there's nothing missing. So when we take that backward step, that lovely phrase of Dogen's, beneath the words, the ideas, the wishful dreams of something other, some other place, and into the immediacy of our own experience, there's nothing further to look for. No reasons, no expectations. Right now, doing each thing for its own sake. Joshu did not say, "What would you prefer?" or "What do you want?" Every activity becomes a meaningful activity. Wash your bowl. Any gesture or any word can become your heart, and it can have far, far-reaching consequences. So I can give an example of that, one which I've used, some of you I'm sure have heard before. I used to work with homeless for many, many, many years, and I lived across the street, and I would walk to work every morning, or walk to wherever I was going. So one morning about 8 o'clock, I'm walking down Market Street on the right-hand side, somewhere near 7th, This young man comes riding up on a bike. And he's obviously on his way to work. He has suit pants and a light blue shirt with a tie, and his briefcase and suit coat are tied on the back of his bike. And he pedals up to me and he says, "Hey, Tony, how are you doing?" I said, "I'm doing fine. How are you?" He says, "You don't remember me, do you?" And I said, "No, I don't." He said, "Well, about 3 years ago in the Tenderloin, you literally picked me up by the collar and the shoulders and pulled me out of the gutter." He said, "I was starving to death. I was a total drunk. I was covered with sores. My pants were full of shit. I had lice. And you pulled me across the sidewalk and you propped me up against the wall. And all the while you were doing that, you were saying, 'You can do it. I know you can do it. You can get over this. You can do it.' And then you went on your way." So I said, "I want to thank you. I did do it." So for me, when I did that, which I, or usually me and a coworker, pulled countless people out of gutters and propped them up against walls, I would always say that, you can do better than this, or you can do it, or you have the strength. Reach down there, you have the strength. Automatic pro forma part of my routine. But this man heard me. And he showed up with proof that he heard me. So the point is, you never know when the words coming out of your mouth, no matter what the syllables, or no matter what the sounds may be, what actually will be said is Joshua saying, "Go wash your bowl." So as I promised, it's a short lecture. I think. Yes. So Mark informs me that there's time that sometimes people might want to make comments or questions. Want to take two or three? If anyone has anything.
Well, how long was your work career? Are you working now?
I'm not. I'm busy with the Zendo, Zen, this, Zen, that, up in Sonoma County. I worked with homeless for about 12 years, and prior to that, a couple of years with a low-fee community clinic, and prior to that, a couple of years with former felons, and prior to that, 3 or 4 years in a locked psych unit. Yeah. But I'm not doing it now.
How's it feel?
Kind of warm right now. Otherwise, it feels pretty good, yeah.
What do you think about all this transmission and what about all that?
What do I think about transmission?
Yeah.
I'm mostly grateful to Blanche. Blanche entrusted me with the precepts, which is still sort of stunning for me, it's a serious job, you know. Yeah, so I take it seriously.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much.
Joshua
said, "Wash your bowl," meaning attend
to
what's right in front of you. How do we treat matters of money as matters of enlightenment? How do we treat them? Well, we treat them as, first of all, they are right in front of you. I mean, like, what sort of choices do you make about it? First of all, pay attention to what you're doing. Anyone I have ever known has had problems with money, or the major problem, whatever sort of diagnosis you want to put on it, is they're not paying attention. It's a form of energy, after all. It comes and it goes, and you have some sort of control over it while it's in front of you, so do what you will. But there's many, many guidelines and practice to help you with that. You know, I mean, you're not alone without access to information. One isn't, I should say.
Whatever happened to the leather jacket with the fringe?
The leather jacket with the fringe.
The Darlene you were wearing when Darlene...
Oh, you know, we still have that. We still have that. That once when Ethan was in high school, his girlfriend entered our closet and she says, God, this closet is greater than Buffalo Exchange. Look at this. She's digging out all this stuff that we hadn't seen for years. Yeah. I'll give you what, 10 minutes extra sleep. But I got to tell you my most favorite Joshu story first, which is there are many specific references to Sun Tzu Ming in his recorded sayings. It comes up a lot. He quotes it a lot. People ask him many questions. But my favorite is, which is not necessarily about that, was a monk asked Joshu, "What is it that is holy?" And Joshu said, "A puddle of piss in the Pure Land." And the monk said, "I ask you to reveal it to me." And Joshu said, "Don't tempt me." So, that's enough. Thank you very much. May I see a sentence very easy in place. Yes, sir.